Hello, you're listening to Romeo And, a podcast about masculinities, nice guys, sexism, and what it means to be a man in our society today.
I'm your host, Street Saint.
I talked about mental illness in the last episode, and usually I like to diversify my introductory rants a little bit, but I had to bring this up again because I just read an article that gave me a new perspective that I didn't really touch on. Last week, I talked about mental illness from the perspective of how we talk about it and how we should be talking about it. But this week, I want to focus specifically on men because, well, you know, what it means to be a man in our society today. It's in the intro. It's what this show is all about. So why am I so big on mental health when it comes to men again? If you've heard me talk about it before, I always come back to how men are not educated about mental illness. Well, no one is really, but especially not men. And when we are, it's directly opposed to our teaching that men need to be strong and brave and basically anything but weak. And since we see mental illness as weakness and sadness and depression as weakness, we pretend that we're immune to their effects. But just like I said last week, the worst thing you can do about a mental illness is pretend that it doesn't affect you. Or think that you shouldn't have it just because of who you are and what your life is like. But just because you're a man and a tough guy doesn't mean you can't get depressed. Quite the contrary, actually. Suicide is the number one killer of men under 50. More than cancer, more than car accidents. And men are 4 times more likely to commit suicide than women. So if you think all of this is no big deal, good morning. But because men are not allowed to be weak or show emotion, they deny and repress their feelings, and they refuse to seek help. And even when they do seek help, a lot of men lie about what's actually going on in their lives, even to their counselors. This is how bad the reality is. Just a quick reminder, in case you forgot, about how important it is for us to talk about men's issues. But the article that I read that got me thinking about this again is one that talked about men seeking free emotional support. It was an article for the upcoming intersectional feminist publication called Harlot Magazine, and it talks about how sex workers are often contracted by men who aren't looking for sex, but companionship. And they called it emotional labor. And I'll have a link to the article in the show notes in case you want to read it yourself. But essentially, a lot of sex workers make their money from emotional labor. Basically, they're not having sex or performing any kind of fetish acts with the men who visit them, but instead just talking to them about, you know, whatever. Because that's what men want, what they really want. They want someone to simply listen to them, to coddle them, to be intimate with them, to just touch them. Because we're not allowed or supposed to get that. Because it's seen as weak and effeminate. Men are told that what they're really interested in is sex. And it sounds pretty legit to us because what is intimacy and closeness other than just sex? Sex is really easy to define. We're both getting naked and rubbing our bodies against each other. That makes sense. That sounds like something I would like to do. But this overlooks the intimacy and passion behind sex. But guys think that's pansy, girly stuff anyway, so who cares? Well, you should care. Because it's what women want, and most likely, it's what you actually want too. And once guys are able to get past this idea that intimacy and love makes you a sissy, then they'll be able to make better choices about how they interact with women. But as it stands now, guys see sex as the end-all be-all, and so they think it's synonymous with intimacy. And since we think going to see a psychiatrist or a counselor is the same thing as admitting that you're weak, we instead go see sex workers. Because it's totally acceptable for a man to go to a strip club, but not to a psychotherapist. And once guys realize how open sex workers are to them, how accepting they are of who they are as people, including their faults and vices, we see how cathartic it can be to open up. Because what is a sex worker? What is their job? It's to simply listen to men, to listen to what they want and what they like, and to accept them for who they are. Because the customer is always right. And so these guys who are totally ashamed of who they are and what they like rush to sex workers because of how much better they make them feel about themselves. Suddenly they feel like they can be completely honest about who they are as people without being judged or criticized or called unmanly. And thank God for sex workers too, man. Otherwise, I feel like the 30,000 plus men who die every year from suicide in the US alone would be way higher. And so, as I was reading this Harlot Magazine article, I was thinking about how glad I was that a feminist publication was taking the time to bring up this terrible reality that men feel like sex workers are the only people they can turn to for their emotional support and validation. However, as I got to the second part of the article, the message shifted. It wasn't actually an article intending to bring up this sad reality about men's mental health. Its intention was to bring up the fact that a lot of these men seeking emotional support from sex workers are expecting to get that support for free. This put me in a deep hole of ambivalence. A place I often seem to find myself, I'm noticing. Because, yeah, it sucks that a lot of guys are trying to take advantage of the fact that the consultation aspect of seeking sex work is often free. And, like I said, that aspect is often all a guy is really after. Having someone ask them about their day and tell them that they're loved and just generally make them feel wanted. And so, I get it. As a sex worker, you shouldn't be working for free. But what about the dudes struggling with depression and other self-deprecating mental disorders? Where is the advice for these guys? Where should they go? What should they do? Closing your doors to these men because they won't pony up is just further proof that all a man really is worth is his money, which is how a lot of guys feel about themselves. And that's not to say that the Harlot Magazine article was problematic, but like I said, no one seems to be talking about this stuff from the perspective of the guys who are looking for help. We think it's perfectly fine to make fun of them or complain about them or criticize them, but who's actually doing something to help them? And that's not a rhetorical question. I actually really want to know so that I can recommend them to everybody. Because I'm totally at a loss myself. I want to help, but I'm not sure what I can really do, or what anyone can really do. Because until we change the way we talk about men and the way we treat men and educate men, then this is just going to keep happening. All of this is not going to go away all at once. You know what would make a killing? Someone who is a trained and professional counselor who also does sex work. Because you can attract men to your business as if you're an escort, but then you just counsel them like you would normally. Just maybe in lingerie or something. In my opinion, you would get way more happy customers than any other sex industry on the market right now. Plus, you would be doing mankind a huge solid. In more ways than one. Bow chicka bow wow. Oh my god, that's actually genius. Can I patent that? You know what? Screw the patent. Someone just go out and start that business. I will fund your Kickstarter. You want to talk about what men really need? But anyway, let me know what you think. Are men just being selfish? looking for free ways to talk to women who will just boost their already inflated egos? Or are men really suffering, as evidenced by the inflated rates of suicide and depression? Also, would you go to a brothel where all the employees are secretly trained psychologists? Would you support that Kickstarter campaign? I'm not even gonna lie to you, I'd do it in a heartbeat. Sponsors? Anyone? Anyone? Right, well, until we get that business up and running, I guess I'll just have to do with this podcast here. In the second half of the show, I'm going to be talking about the Ridley Scott movie Gladiator, starring Russell Crowe, so stay tuned. That's coming up next here on Romeo and... Normally, when I pick out a movie to do an analysis of, I do so with some kind of idea in mind of what I want to say about it. I pick movies that I know highlight some kind of gender inequality, or subverts one. Or I pick a movie that illustrates a common misconception or stereotype about men. Or one that I just know a lot of men really like. Well, this week, I decided to do things a little differently. Instead of picking a movie specifically for what I thought I might say about it, I decided to choose a movie that I knew a lot of people have seen, and one that probably has some key messages in it. I must say that the experiment was almost a spectacular failure, because the movie I chose was Gladiator, directed by Ridley Scott and starring Russell Crowe. The problem I had with the movie is that it was just... too good. Like, so good I couldn't find any fault in it. Not from a gender representation standpoint, anyway. I hadn't seen the movie since I was about 12, so all I really remembered about the movie is that I enjoyed it. But I figured it's a movie about a hero who fights for the honor of his murdered wife. Surely there's something I could pick apart about it. But the reason that I'm saying all of this is because sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, and sometimes a really good movie and a really well-told story is just that. And so that's one of the main things I wanted to talk about in regards to the movie. How not every media needs to be picked apart. That we can enjoy things as they are, even if they aren't perfect. But I also do want to talk about what the movie did well, and why it's so damn good. I recognize that it is a change of pace, since you're all used to me finding fault in everything I watch. Well, I figure you gotta change things up every once in a while. And before I go on, let me just remind you about the inevitable spoilers ahead. If you haven't seen Gladiator yet, you need to go out and do it, because it's a modern-day classic. Hard to believe it's already 15 years old. Jesus. In any case, don't be mad if I unintentionally ruin the ending for you. Moving on. Now, like I said, no movie is perfect. That's what makes art, art. If it were all perfect, we would have nothing to comment on. Nothing to analyze, nothing to argue and debate over. And though Ridley Scott does a hell of a job, there are still plenty of elements in the movie you can find fault about. For example, where are all the women in the film? We have Lucilia, played by Connie Nielsen. She's the daughter of Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius and sister to the crazed and power-hungry Commodus. Normally, I'd be upset that she's simply a foil for the male heroes, or that she has no personality or motives of her own, or that she's simply background decoration. But none of that is the case here. She did have, and still has, a thing for our hero, Maximus Desmus Meridius, but who wouldn't? And that doesn't even interfere with her desire to see her father's empire thrive. She is the one who heads the revolt against the evil Commodus, who seeks to turn the Roman Empire into a tyranny. Not our hero Maximus. Sure, he wants what's best for his people. Sure, he's the linchpin that brings about the fall of Commodus's empire. But Lucilla is the one who convinces him to go along with the plan. And she didn't even have to bribe him with sex. Strong, independent woman? Check. But what about the other women in the film? The only other primary female character is Maximus's wife, Giannina, who's pictured maybe 2 or 3 times in the movie tops. Very briefly, and she has 0 speaking lines. It's also her death that spurs Maximus to seek vengeance against Commodus. In other words, her death is the inciting incident for his hero's journey. Woman in refrigerator much? But hey, it's a revenge movie, and Maximus loves nothing more than his wife, his kid, and his farm back in Spain. And so Commodus has his men destroy all 3. It's an overdone trope, but, you know, it doesn't mean it can't ever be done well. And in this case, it is. I mean, in all honesty, his family didn't really need to die since Commodus had already sent his men to kill Maximus. Their death is just to illustrate Commodus's insanity and to fuel Maximus's rage. But I totally missed all of that because the scene was just so damn dramatic. Damn you, Mr. Scott. But then, there are no other women in the film. Like, at all, basically. Although, it is a movie about gladiators and war and politics, all in ancient Rome, so we can expect that not a lot of women were directly involved in all the goings-on. Although, it is worth noting that one of the main combatants in the recreation of the Battle of Zama, which was Maximus's first fight in the Roman Colosseum, was a woman. And she was pretty badass, too. Leading the charge and taking people out. And then she dies this epic death, just like her male counterparts. She wasn't sexualized. The fact that she was a woman wasn't dangled around in our faces. It was simply, here comes the Roman army, and one just happens to be a woman. I didn't even remember that happened until I rewatched the movie. No big deal, just a woman on the battlefield. Moving on. And going off of that, we could also talk about how the movie glorifies violence. Men fighting and killing other men. But hey, it's a movie about Roman gladiators. It's literally a movie about people who glorified violence so much that they put it in an arena so thousands of people could pay to watch it. Plus, we would be lying to ourselves if we said we didn't watch action movies for the violence. People love violence. And I don't see anything wrong with indulging in it every once in a while. Unless you're doing it in real life, of course. And then I could also bring up Commodus's character. He's this fairly effeminate guy who's overly dramatic and kind of a wuss. And the thing about wussies in movies is that they're always the bad guy. Unless they change their ways in order to become the hero. Commodus runs away from battle because he's scared. A true man would never fear battle. And so he's a spoiled brat. Once again, making him the villain. But truth be told, this is just one aspect of his character. He could have just been a wuss who runs away from battle. But he ran away from battle only when it was a fair fight. When he knew he had the upper hand, or that the outcome was controlled in some way, he would fight to show off his skills. So he wasn't really a wuss. He was just a manipulative, lying scumbag. And there's nothing wrong with making a manipulative, lying scumbag the villain of your movie. And what I'm trying to get at here is that there's nothing wrong with indulging in a movie that glorifies violence, or one that has suggestive themes. There's nothing wrong with having an all-male or heavily male cast. There's nothing wrong with casting a beautiful woman to play your leading lady. It's just a matter of how you do it. If you're doing these things just for the sake of doing it, then it kind of sucks. But if you're fleshing out your characters and you're staying true to your genre and the world of your story, then that's good art. Gladiator is an example of all of this. A movie that is a testosterone overload with men doing battle with other men and senselessly killing each other, but one that doesn't minimize women to the status of objects. One where sex and the desire for sex is not a pervasive theme, where it isn't implied that all men want is a beautiful woman to have sex with. Maximus wants to be reunited with his wife, but also his son. By the way, he's a father. And he loves his kid. But he also loves his country and his emperor, Marcus Aurelius. He wants the empire to thrive, but he also wants to just be at home with his wife and kid. But then he has to juggle that with the fact that he's a war hero and the fact that he's enslaved to fight to the death every day to hopefully gain vengeance on the man who killed his wife, son, and mentor. That's some character depth. And while we're on the subject, let's take a closer look at Maximus Decimus Meridius. Much like Captain William Lennox in the Transformers movie, Maximus is what I call an ideal man. He is exactly what we tell every young boy to strive to be. First, he's a military commander who not only directs his men, but also fights alongside them. And due to his skill and superior leadership, his men have enormous respect for him. But he's not pompous about his skills. In fact, he's quite humble. And all he really wants is to go home to his wife and son and live a modest life as a farmer. And then there's that. He's a family man. He doesn't sleep around. He doesn't seem the slightest bit interested in breaking his vows to his wife. He absolutely adores her, and he absolutely adores his son. He's not afraid of commitment, he has a sound moral compass, and he has a healthy respect for authority. He is the man every mother and every father wants their son to grow up and be. And now, I've said it before, and I'll say it again, this is not the end-all and be-all of masculinity. I changed the intro to the show to insist this podcast is about masculinities, plural, because there isn't just one way to be a man. However, kudos to you, Mr. Scott, for making me forget about all that. And kudos to you, Mr. Crow, for portraying it so damn well. Because all the while I was watching this movie, I was thinking to myself, damn, I want to be Maximus when I grow up. Boom! Right in the testosterone. But, like I said, not every movie needs to have some feminist takeaway where all the female characters swoop in to rescue the men to show that they can do it. Not every movie needs to remind us that violence is not something to be glorified or celebrated. You can have a movie like this and have a feminist like me crying like a baby at the end of it. Oh, did I mention that? Oh yeah, I cried at the end of this movie. And it was another real good cry. Like the one that I had at the end of The Amazing Spider-Man 2 from the very first episode of the podcast, remember that? Yeah, it was great. It was another moment that caught me completely off guard. It was the very last scene of the movie where Juba, who you probably remember as that one black guy in the movie, him. He was burying the figurines of Maximus's wife and son with him in this grave. I didn't mention about the spoilers, right? In any case, Juba calls back to the conversation that he has with Maximus that one day he'll be reunited with his dead wife and kid, but not yet. And so he says that one day he'll see Maximus again, but not yet. And from out of nowhere, I started crying like a baby. Just like how Maximus cries when he finds his wife and son murdered and crucified at his burnt-down farm. It was snotty and mucousy and completely pathetic. But you know what? Even Maximus Decimus Meridius can cry, so why the hell are you holding it in, tough guy? Apparently, Ridley Scott was going to have Maximus do one of those I'm too much of a badass to break down scenes. You know, the kind where he would shed a solitary tear or something through a bitter snarl. But then he decided, you know what? Fuck it. Maximus just found the love of his life and his very own son slain in cold blood when they were completely innocent. He also just happens to be a human freaking being. And so he drops to his knees and cries like a baby. As he should. None of this quietly brooding badass bullshit. Yes, you can be a hardened soldier who fights to the death every day and still cry about your wife dying. It doesn't make you a weakling. You know who is a weakling? Freaking Commodus. And not only does he not cry over his father's death, he's the one who kills him. I'm just glad I still have it in me. It's been a long time coming, but I've actually been able to cry over movies and music now. It's pretty great. And maybe one of these days, real life will actually spur me to tears as well. Just the price you pay for breaking your emotion receptors for want of being a better, more emotionless man. But that's all I really have to say about the movie. It was just a really good fucking movie, man. And so my request of you is to watch Gladiator again and tell me it's not a freaking masterpiece. No, I'm just kidding. My request of you is to be a man and let it out. No shame in crying. It certainly doesn't make you weak. And if you're like me and you somehow lost your ability to cry because you were trying so hard to be a man, don't worry about it. I get it. Although, might I suggest listening to some really good music or watching some really good movies? And when you feel that urge coming, just try and let it come. If you feel more comfortable, start by doing it by yourself, so you know no one is going to give you any crap about crying. But also, I'd love for you to all recognize that sometimes a cigar is indeed just a cigar. There's no need to try and pick apart every media you watch. It's important to be mindful, but it's also important to be able to enjoy these things for what they really are. Entertainment. If you can't find any narratives you actually enjoy because you're nitpicking every reason why they aren't PC or something, you're probably being a little too judgmental about things. Plus, you can totally love something even when you recognize how awful its messages and overall quality is. I do it all the time. But that's it for this episode of Romeo and... As always, if you have a story you want featured on the podcast, send me a message via email, contact@stsaint.com, or give me a call, 516-514-7878. Also, be sure to follow me on social media, like Romeo and on Facebook, or follow me on Twitter, @street_saint. New episodes of Romeo and are published weekly, so make sure you get every episode when it's released by subscribing to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or the podcatcher of your choice. But if you do nothing else, just go to iTunes and Stitcher and leave us a 5-star rating. There's nothing more valuable for the show than getting a bunch of good ratings from all you guys. Thanks again for listening. I am Street Saint, and I'll see you next time.